following is a presentation of Learfield IMG College. From the Georgia Southern Sports Network, powered by Learfield IMG College.
Wings up, Eagle Nation! Touchdown, Georgia Southern!
This is Inside Eagle Nation, your all-access look into Eagle athletics.
Taking a look through all the other action in Georgia Southern athletics this past week. A lot of road action. A lot of teams hitting the old I-16 out of town.
Getting on the steel horse and taking us to parts north, south, west, wherever. Can't really go too much farther east.
Now let's return to the Learfield IMG College studios. Here are your hosts, Colin Lacey and Danny Reed.
That's a fact, Jack.
Welcome into another edition of Inside Eagle Nation here all across the Georgia Southern Sports Network. Colin Lacey and Danny Reed as we get set for another week in Georgia Southern Athletics. Happy Tuesday. We've started a tradition with that.
Happy Tuesday.
With Georgia Southern Athletics and Inside Eagle Nation, brought to you by our good friends over at Arcola Septic. Arcola Septic is your premier septic services provider to Bullock, Bryan, and adjoining counties, and a great family-owned business that's run by a pair of Georgia Southern alumni. Make sure to give them a call at 912-318-7939 or visit them online at arcolaseptic.com. For both commercial and residential customers, their more than 10 years of experience can help you out with pumping and servicing your septic system, drain field repairs, new system installation, and all of your septic needs. Remember to follow them on Facebook, Arcola Septic, yesterday's Meals on Wheels. A pretty exciting week for Georgia Southern Athletics. We will get into some hardware that came back to Statesboro a little bit later on in this week's edition, but Georgia Southern men's golf will start it off. Finished third out of 13 up at the Mountaineer Invitational last week. They look ahead to the Sun Belt Conference Championships that's beginning this coming Sunday. It'll roll through next Wednesday, so we'll look on that on the scoreboard on next week's edition. That's out in El Dorado, Arkansas, next again Sunday through Wednesday, the 25th through the 28th. Georgia Southern Women's Golf currently at the Sun Belt Conference Championships down in Daytona. Through day two, Georgia Southern was tied for third with 13 over par. And taking a look at the scoreboard, they were supposed to tee off at about 8:45 this morning, but because of lightning in the area, apparently talking with Dan McDonald, who's calling it for ESPN+, Sunbelt and Travis Llewellyn and Dan do a fantastic job with the golf coverage on ESPN+. But according to him, there is a nasty lightning storm that is down in Daytona that is halting play for right now. There's supposed to be some more weather coming in later on this afternoon, so hopefully they will have a window to get this in. But Georgia Southern has yet to tee off. Again, they will be teeing off one of the first groups whenever play does resume down in Daytona. Georgia Southern men's tennis had both of their matches postponed this past weekend. They look ahead to the Sun Belt Conference Tournament in Peachtree City, and that begins Friday. The bracket for that will come out in the next day or so, so turn your attention to gseagles.com and sunbeltsports.org when that comes out. But Georgia Southern women's tennis, well, they did a thing. They finished off the Sun Belt Conference Tournament with a win to win the Sun Belt Crown. Friday, it started with a 4-0 victory over ULM. Saturday, defeated UTA 4-2, and then finished off the weekend with a 4-3 victory over South Alabama on Sunday to wrap it up and bring home some hardware to Statesboro.
Yeah, we were following the stat portion as we were coming back from Conway, and we knew that it was close. We knew they had to rally, but got down to the final couple of points. Elizabeth Goins had a chance to clinch the first championship since 96, I think, and when it finally became final, it was, wow, that's the third Sun Belt championship that Georgia Southern Athletics has claimed since moving into the league. That's an historic moment.
And it was something you talked about. We were watching it coming back from Conway. We had kind of kept an eye on it throughout all the entire weekend. We talked about it on the broadcast a lot this weekend of what the scoreboard looked like. We had already left when that was still going since it went to that final set with Elizabeth Goins. But Aaron Soka was kind of our out-of-town scoreboard in the back seat on our way back from Conway. And she scored the point, and Aaron's like, they did it! And then he texted Sean McCaffrey.
Watching the videos that came out from the Sun Belt and from GS Athletics, and then another video that Women's Golf posted of them watching the final couple of points, and knowing that all of GS Athletics was able to pull together, and then the welcome home party that kind of came up within just an hour or two, being able to get that planned and having, I'd say, roughly 100 people waiting in the parish parking lot when they pulled in. Coach McCaffrey spoke for a couple of moments. They had the trophy with them. That's just such a special moment for them. It's just an awesome thing.
Timed out perfectly. Georgia Southern baseball had just gotten back from Conway about 15, 20 minutes earlier, so the entire baseball team made their way down there. You saw a whole parade of big pickup trucks pull into the parking lot about 10 minutes after we got back, and so it was a nice welcome back for Georgia Southern women's tennis. Congratulations to them. They will have the selection show of where they will go for the NCAA regional. That on the 3rd of May. And talking with Chad Jackson, their sports information director, he said that looking at all the standings and everything that goes into play, since UT Arlington and South Alabama were both in the top 75 in the country, that may propel Georgia Southern not just to a 4 seed where you're facing a 1 and the host of whatever regional you go to, but that may bump you up into a 3rd spot, and so you've got more of an opportunity to possibly win a game in the NCAA regionals.
Well, I would hope finishing on an 11-match winning streak would have a little bit to do with it as well. That's something that's propelled them to 19 wins. That's a program record. So I'm hoping that all of those credentials and the way that they finished, the fact that it's just been such an historic run, is going to help them maybe bump their way up to a 3 seed and not have to worry about going to be a 4 and take on a 1, whether that's in Atlanta or Athens. I mean, geographically, I think that the NCAA would probably try to go that route.
Yeah.
But the experience that they're going to get here in a couple of weeks is one that they're going to remember for the rest of their lives.
Again, the selection show will be on the 3rd of May. There's a chance that you might see that coming around Georgia Southern Athletics in the next couple of weeks. But Georgia Southern track was up in Atlanta in the Georgia Tech Invite. They won 4 events and 10 top 5 finishes. Georgia Southern ended up winning the 100-meter dash, 200-meter dash, 400-meter dash, and the 4x100 relay. So congratulations to head coach Kelly Carter and the Georgia Southern track team for their work up in Atlanta this past weekend. Georgia Southern softball had a busy week. Started with a doubleheader on Tuesday against Charleston Southern over at Eagle Field. While Georgia Southern baseball was going on here, we kind of kept an ear out to left field to see what kind of cheers we heard.
See, I feel weird about saying this, but I almost wish they would cut down some of the pines so we could look through and actually watch a little bit of the softball. I'll kind of say that facetiously. I love the pines. That's part of the home run calls when they get hit to left. But we could only see a little bit of the outfield, a little bit of the bleachers, and then you might be able to get a slip near in between first and second every now and then. You can hear the PA, though, when something's going on.
But Georgia Southern fell in both games to Charleston Southern, 8-7 in the first, 4-1 in the second game. Moved on to Sunbelt Conference play, one of just 3 home weekends for Georgia Southern softball in conference play. Friday, it started with an 11-3 run rule victory in 6 innings against Appalachian State. Game 2 on Friday was a 6-3 loss at the hands of the Mountaineers, and then a tough one on Saturday. Fell 5-2, but led that game 2-1 into the 6th inning. But just a late rally by Appalachian State would take the weekend from Georgia Southern. But that was a weekend that was moved around a lot because of weather in the area this weekend. It was supposed to be 1 on Saturday and then 2 on Sunday. They then moved it to 1 on Friday, 2 on Saturday, and then moved it to 2 on Friday, 1 on Saturday. So they kind of did a flip-flop of what South Alabama and Louisiana did on the baseball side.
Jeez.
So it'll be a 4-game week for Georgia Southern this week, as they will head to Texas State this weekend, but it's a midweek matchup on Wednesday against the Jacksonville Dolphins. That's at Eagle Field in Statesboro. 5 o'clock first pitch, and then head out to San Marcos, a beautiful facility out for the Bobcats. 2 o'clock first pitch on Saturday. That'll be followed by the second game of the doubleheader, and then noon on Sunday for the single game.
That's a heck of a test, because I think Texas State's won 21 of their last 23. I mean, they dropped 2 of 3 over the weekend to Louisiana, but there's no shame in that. I think they've won 62 consecutive conference series, if Jay Walker told us right, during the baseball broadcast of them in South Alabama when we were coming back from Conway. But Texas State softball has definitely gone up to about, if the Cajuns are here, Texas State's, the elevator's going up to the top floor. May not be all the way there yet. I think they actually did beat them for a conference championship, I want to say, a couple of years ago. I can't say that for sure, but I do know that they've become one of the top programs in this league.
So good luck to Kim Dean and company as another – I feel like we say they're on the road every week. We've talked about it a lot of times, how 5 of the 8 conference weekends are on the road this year. It's just kind of how the schedule fell.
Yeah.
But – that's tough to do, especially in this crazy year where you're having to get on a plane for a lot of those as well.
Looking at the Athletic travel plan, though, that's the first time really getting to fly since the end of football season, because basketball wasn't flying anywhere, had a chance to have some major competition, but that was all axed because of COVID. And then with intra-divisional play, you're not seeing anybody in the West, so we were not flying to Texas, we weren't flying to Arkansas, we weren't flying to Louisiana. Pensacola was a long bus trip for us, and maybe could have flown it, but it's just one of those where you're on the fence of, do you fly it, do you bus it? But in this instance, you bus it. And even for baseball this week, and this is going to be the first flight of the season, having to go out to Oklahoma, so that's one of those where you're kind of clearing a barrier in this COVID season. But this is getting us closer to the idea of, if we can start to fly in a non-football sense, because you're going to have to with football. That's what makes the money. That's what steers the ship in most cases. But if you can get that with other sports, then maybe we're a little bit closer to being where we were.
You and I were talking about it on the way home from Coastal. This will be the first flight for you since the bowl game.
Yeah.
Aaron and I drove down to the bowl game, so I think this is the first flight for me since Army football last year.
Yeah, we need one to fix that.
Yeah, and we need to forget that one. So,
because in my situation, I was in Fort Myers calling men's basketball against Florida Gulf Coast for the final game before the Christmas break, and that next morning I went from Fort Myers to Atlanta, Atlanta to New Orleans. Terry got me at the airport, and I think I was there about an hour or so before Eagle tailgate began, and then fortunately it was a really good day in the Superdome. Beat the tar out of Louisiana Tech, which is always nice. But got to meet Dave Nitz officially, and that's a memory we'll always have.
Speaking of Dave Nitz, need to extend a congratulations out to
yes.
him. He is going to semi-retire following this year. He's still going to handle the baseball duties at Louisiana Tech, but giving up football and men's basketball, so a search out for that one. But big congratulations out to him for somebody that's done it as long as he has, not just at Louisiana Tech, but overall. And we talked about it. His spotting boards are from they're taped to a ceiling tile
yeah.
from WMCD.
People know his story, being here for 3 years, then spending some time with Lou Holtz at William & Mary, 1 year at Arkansas Tech, which ironically was where Doug Roos was coaching before he came back to Statesboro. They were, of course, there together, but 46 years as the voice of Louisiana Tech. And he was also doing minor league baseball during the summer, so he was hardly taking any time off. And he was working in between, doing other odd jobs, so he was not resting hardly at all. But somebody that, from what we understand, big fan of driving, big fan of long road trips, but he has earned the opportunity to say, look, I'm pulling back a little bit. I'm going to do baseball only, because I think when we all get to a certain point, baseball is the one that we want to do.
Yeah.
It's just the most chill and the easiest one to kind of settle into. But, yeah, Louisiana Tech will have a new football basketball guy starting this fall, and that should be one that garners a lot of attention.
Speaking of Georgia Southern football, you've got the Blue-White spring game coming up this weekend. We will have coverage for you of that one on GSEagles.com. You can also listen in town in Statesboro on 106.5 WMCD, our sister station from our flagship 94.9 The Eagle. But you're going to have Mike Grace, Frank Sulkowski, Terry Harvin might pop in every now and then. But a busy weekend around Georgia Southern Athletics. It starts with the Southern Smoke Cook-Off, where you've got the number of teams of the Georgia Southern administration and coaches. I think Coach Willis from volleyball. I think I saw Reggie Simpkins had his little placard go out. Jared Binko,
Tracy's
Hamm.
Going, yep.
I still think Terry should have been in this, because of all the pictures he sends us of his twisted bacon that he does, I'm all for it.
I'm going to guess that this is a let's see how it goes, and then next year cast the net a little bit wider, incorporate some fans, see if we can get some fan recipes. I know there's quite a few that are at the football tailgate that would love to not only just taste what's going to be done, but they'd like to see how they stack up against some members of the athletic department as well.
I don't know, but whatever would be entered, if there was a buffalo chicken dip contest, I know who wins.
Yeah, we've that Hall of Fame has won.
Yes. And it is Kathy. It's just called the Kathy Bevel Hall of Fame. That's it. There's only one.
That's part of what makes – there are a lot of things that make football Saturdays or football Wednesdays, football Thursdays, you get where I'm going with it. But that's part of what makes a football day in Statesboro. Walk around, see the trailers, see the trucks, see everybody getting ready for Georgia Southern football, but it's the fair. It's the camaraderie. It's, as Frank would say, the fellowship. It's what makes it special, and it's what Georgia Southern offers that nobody else does.
I was talking to Haley Blitz, the new video guru for Georgia Southern Communications, just got into town the last couple of weeks, but she was like, okay, so what can I expect for a football game day? I was like, well, the first one, you got to get there early and come with us. We're going to take you to this nice tent over to the left of our tailgate, and you're going to, if you haven't already, which you probably would have by then, meet our good buddy Leonard Bevel, and his sister-in-law makes this buffalo chicken dip. It is fantastic. You're going to want to eat the entire pan, but that is frowned upon. And she goes, okay.
See, we're not going to be there this Saturday, so I'm not sure if they will be making said buffalo chicken dip, which makes me sad because now we're going to have to wait till September the 4th against Gardner-Webb. But the fact that we can look to that is an official, let's reach out and grab a little bit of normal. Hopefully Paulson Stadium will officially be full capacity. I know the SEC is planning on that, and there's still a lot that can happen over these next few months, but it feels like we can almost reach out and grab it.
Blue-White spring football game this weekend, 1-3 at Allen E. Paulson Stadium. Again, you've got the Southern Smoke Cook-Off presented by Ellis Meats. And when Shelly Pittman was calling Ellis Meats the other day and ordering the amount of meat that the contestants need, it was one of those I just kind of sat in my office like, man, that sounds really good. A lot of ribs, a lot of brisket, and that's what you call a good day.
Yes, please.
You got the EFAA reverse raffle afterwards at Allen E. Paulson Stadium as well, so a full day of Eagle Athletics, and we'll be out in Oklahoma when you got Georgia Southern Baseball with a 2 o'clock first pitch.
We'll ask Mr. Harvin for any stories from the weekend and see how the game went and see how the event went, but we know how important he is to the EFAA reverse raffle. It's an event that they have done for so many years, and it is one of the bigger events that Georgia Southern Athletics is involved with all year long. So this is a very important weekend that's outside of a football regular season. And for baseball, it's a big week as well, continuing the 7-game road trip. We're going to get to that in a minute, and nice to think that we're going to journey to Big 12 country for it.
Yeah, this is one that, I'm not going to lie, we've had circled on our calendars for a little while. Not that you're necessarily looking ahead to it, but it's one that this is going to be a cool trip.
There's a crimson circle around it, and it's been there for a while.
I've never been to the state of Oklahoma.
Neither have I.
Oh, how about that?
But I've heard a lot about the Bricktown area in Oklahoma City, which is where we're going to be flying into, and it's roughly 20 minutes to get to Norman, where OU is located. But I'm hoping, schedule-wise, not only to get set up at Dale Mitchell Park, but if we can find a way to get to Memorial Stadium, if we get to the Noble Center, see basketball, be able to, and I'm sure there's going to be COVID restrictions because, as we found out, Oklahoma is one of the strictest COVID-wise in the entire country. But if we can find some people that are nice enough to let us in an open gate or prop a door open, maybe we can get in and just take a picture or two and just be able to soak in it, because otherwise, I don't know when we'd be going to Oklahoma.
Yeah.
Unless it's for some kind of regional, which, hey, you never know this year with baseball. You don't know with what future football schedules are going to have, or non-conference basketball, if we can get back to normal and get those major games. But this is one of those, you're not going to get this very much.
No. We're going to talk to Toby Rowland, the voice of Oklahoma, a little bit later on in this week's edition of Inside Eagle Nation. But before we dive into baseball, got to remind you, we wrap up now every edition of Inside Eagle Nation with a You Pick. Now, you can comment on Facebook Live, you can text us at 912-274-3607, or tweet at GS Sports Network. And for the last 5-10 minutes, whatever it ends up being, you pick. It doesn't have to be about Georgia Southern Athletics. It's something that you've heard us talk about, you want us to talk about, you heard rumblings of, you want us to tell the full story, and if we can, we will. And anything that you pick, we have to talk about.
A story that you want to hear more on, a place that we've been, a favorite food, really anything.
You know, that's kind of scary now that we put that out.
Yeah, but it all depends.
Knowing some of the people that are watching this, that could be dangerous.
Well, that's the thing. We don't. I can't see the screen. You're the one that's looking directly at it, so I can't tell you.
It's even worse for you then.
Well, I can't tell you who's watching, how many are watching, but if somebody could think of something good that we can flush out a little bit and provide some deeper background information, then that'll be fun.
So anything that you want us to talk about, a funny story you've heard, anything, you pick. Like, that's why it's called You Pick.
Like, for instance, this weekend when Mason McWhorter continued to go crazy in Conway, you brought up about how Chipper Jones named his son Shea because of all the success he had at Shea Stadium. And we said, did someone bring this?
I think Dr. Deal brought that up.
Okay. Maybe he should name his son Spring or Brooks, or because of all the damage he's done hitting nearly 500 in his career in Conway.
I said S. Brooks McWhorter.
He sent me a message yesterday because apparently it had gotten back to him. I think his dad let him know. We've talked about Jimmy and the hugging percentage and all that.
Jimmy. Or DH.
Apparently, Mason is planning on naming his first son Brooks.
That's incredible.
And he's not joking about that. He said, yeah, I might go Spring Brooks McWhorter. I said, that's one of the best things that we've done in 6 years.
That's fantastic.
So something like that.
Yes.
But that's all up to you.
But it can't be that because we already told it.
But he deserves it. Coach Adams was trying to tell us it must be just the ballpark, but there's supernatural forces that are at play when Mason hits in that ballpark.
It's not often that you're speechless, but there were a couple of times after the second to last and the last home runs, you just kind of sat back in your chair like, what else is there to say?
Look, the one he hit in the ninth inning in game two, which put it out of reach, was a shot to left center, and I think Parker Chavers took two steps, and that was it. The dugout went crazy, and you run out of things to say about somebody that just continually is excellent at a certain place. And look, Mason's hitting 320 in his career now because he's been north of 400 much of this season. When he is at Springsbrook Stadium, and whether it's been against Coastal or those four games in the 2019 conference tournament when Georgia Southern went all the way to the finals, I think in 13 games, close to 500, 8 home runs, 18 RBIs. It's a video game. He's playing a real-life video game when he swings the bat in that ballpark. And even in Game 3, he kept the game alive with a two-out double down the left field line. He's now tied for second in school history in doubles. So even if he couldn't hit the ball over the fence, he was still finding a way to stretch the game out one more batter.
We will dive into Coastal Carolina in just a few minutes, but Georgia Southern had a busy week last week with two midweeks. It started on Tuesday against North Florida. That seems like so long ago.
Well, and we had talked last week that it was early in that day. Okay, we got a five-game week. It's three teams. These are grueling, especially when you've got a road trip at the end of it, and that's while softball was going on beyond the left field fence. If you would have told me, though, that it was going to be in 4-1 week, would have taken it every day considering the three games against Coastal were at the end of it. But you had to start it off against North Florida, and it was a challenge, even though Eagles got up early.
8-6, the victory against the North Florida Ospreys, then moved on to Wednesday against the Mercer Bears. 3-2, the victory. And to be honest, those are two games that you thought you probably should have won. Obviously, Mercer, one of the better offensive teams that Georgia Southern is going to see, and you see that every year from a Craig Gibson team. But those are – they're not rollover games. They're good wins in the midweek, but they're two that you thought you should have handled, and to do it the way that Georgia Southern did. And we talked about it on Wednesday, how we thought it was going to be an offensive explosion, it was going to be a long game, and boy, were we wrong. It was a pitching matchup with a 3-2 victory.
And turned out the North Florida was more of the explosion. Yeah. I know 14 runs is a huge, but considering that Georgia Southern ended up winning the game on a two-run error in the eighth inning – to rally back after blowing a 4-0 lead. But then against Mercer, the thing that sets Georgia Southern apart is their ability to pitch, not just on the weekend but in the midweek. And some teams just look at the midweek as getting a lot of guys experience, throw 8, 9, 10 guys, whatever. But that was just an outstanding midweek game, one that felt like the postseason. I think we mentioned that towards the later part of the ball game. Didn't take the lead until the final batter when Austin Thompson hit the walk-off sacrifice fly. But the rally that occurred in the bottom of the ninth inning, Stephen Curry, we had just said, I think it just came out of your mouth, how special it would have been if Curry would have hit a walk-off home run. He drills one to the center field warning track, and I thought for a minute it was going to go. And then Mason comes up very next pitch, doubles to left center. Avant singles him to third. They intentionally walk Ledford for the second time in the game. And Austin Thompson had a rough evening with guys at the plate. But then first pitch swinging, drills one to right field. Michi does make a pretty nice catch for Mercer, yep. But just way too deep to throw out Mason. First walk-off win of the season. Increases the winning streak to six in a row. Taking that to Conway for a place that, you know, the Eagles have played well. And admittedly, Coastal is a little bit down this year.
Yeah.
They don't quite have the murderer's row lineup that we've become accustomed to the previous four seasons. Pitching-wise, I think in some ways they're a little bit better, especially with Abney out of the bullpen and as good as Cruiser was and a couple of the other guys that they utilized. But credit that Eagle offense for finding a way, and credit the weekend starting pitching for doing well, and credit the bullpen for just keeping on. The stretch the bullpen is in, not just Nick Jones, whole bullpen has been great lately.
It would carry over into the weekend when Georgia Southern heads to Conway along the Grand Strand. Baseball at the beach, they say.
That is what they say. Sometimes. That's what they actually say.
It is. Friday was an 8-2 victory against Coastal on the back of Tyler Owens. And then Saturday got a little bit different than what we expected. Chase Dolander was scratched late in that preparation for that game. Braden Hayes ended up getting the spot start, and he only found out probably 12-15 hours beforehand that he was going to be starting on Saturday.
Yeah.
Again, nothing, we talked about it this weekend, nothing to be extremely alarmed about from Chase. He's a guy that, as a true freshman, last year didn't really have a full high school season. I think we talked about it, only 15 innings last year.
15 innings total. And he was lucky to get that much because Metro Atlanta High School didn't play at all because of COVID.
And so he had thrown 15 innings as a senior in high school before coming to Georgia Southern, which makes the fact that he was on some people's draft boards even more impressive in a 5-round draft. But he had thrown the fourth most innings of a true freshman in the country, and so it's just a little bit of tightness. He's fine. Nothing to be alarmed about, but Braden Hayes did a fantastic job coming in on the spot start, and then on Sunday it would be an 8-6 loss at the hands of Coastal Carolina. They hit 5 home runs, and the fact that just two of them are probably, I don't want to say legitimate home runs, but two of them are home runs at any other ballpark.
Couple tanks.
Yeah.
Couple good shots.
Yeah. But three of them, you could argue, don't get out at J.I. Clements. And so that's one that you don't want to take a loss, but you still take two out of three from Coastal Carolina at their place. They hadn't been swept there since 2000.
Yeah.
And so a 4-1 week, like you talked about, capped off taking two out of three by Coastal was pretty good.
You won 8 out of 9. This team, remember, at one point was struggling to just pick up a victory, period, especially in this ballpark, J.I. Clements Stadium. They were 2-5. Now you're 21-14. And because South Alabama did Georgia Southern a solid by sweeping Louisiana 3 games, Georgia Southern now has the best record in the Sun Belt. They're not first in the East. South Alabama and App are technically tied for first in the East, but that's going to sort itself out a little bit this weekend because Georgia Southern steps out of Sun Belt play, as we mentioned, to go to Oklahoma, and we'll talk about that more with Toby here in just a couple of minutes. But you've also got to look at it as that Georgia Southern only has 3 more conference series left.
Yeah.
And only one of those is on the road.
Thank goodness.
Got South out here in 2 weeks, which is a big old series.
Yeah.
That's a big series because they're not hitting a lot, but they're really pitching. Then you go to Jonesboro, and then you come back here to end the season against UT Arlington. That's it for conference play.
That's so crazy.
And then the other series, we're going to Elon in May. But with only playing 24 league games this season, that means 8 league weekends. Georgia Southern's 5 weekends done. But now they step aside, and several of the other teams in the league will try to get back to a level playing field. That's why the winning percentages are dictating things. Even though Georgia Southern is 9-6, you've got South that's 8-4. You've got App that's tied. I believe they're at 7-2, but they played Lipscomb last weekend, so they're going to really pick up conference play. They've got another series to make up, even though they dropped a 3-game series against Coastal because of their COVID issues. So they're only going to play 21 at most. Coastal's only going to play 21 at most.
Whoever makes schedules in the Sun Belt Conference, I don't know if it's Travis. I know he does football, but I don't envy them.
This is what we're going to see, like we kind of dealt with in regards to the basketball schedule, where you want as many games as you can to try to pile up wins, but at the same time, if you're winning, you're probably losing eventually.
which is going to hurt your winning percentage. But if you're somebody like an App who's played at least three fewer games than everybody else in the division, that could ultimately help you from a winning percentage standpoint. It could help you get a higher seed, even though somebody like a Georgia Southern or a South Alabama maybe has four or five more league victories, but because fewer losses, winning percentage is a fickle little beast, then that's how it's going to be divvied even more. And with pool play this year, it's oh so important to finish one or two in your division, because there is a really protected format where if you finish one or two, you're going to lead one of the four pools, and really all you have to do is win once.
Yeah.
And you're in very good shape to move on to the semifinals. But that's for about a month from now. We'll get to that. That's a little bit of a primer, but we'll get to that.
Before we dive into Oklahoma with the voice of the Oklahoma Sooners, Toby Rowland, do have Kennesaw State coming up tomorrow, a 5 o'clock first pitch up at Stillwell Stadium. That'll kind of lead us towards Oklahoma. We'll stay in Atlanta after the game and then fly out of Hartsfield-Jackson on Thursday morning and make our way out to Oklahoma City and then the short trip to Norman. But it's something that Coach Hinnon talked about, and you and I talked about it on the broadcast throughout the weekend. Georgia Southern had a really, really good approach at the plate and really need to carry that over against Kennesaw.
Yeah, regardless of whether you're playing in a bandbox like Springsbrook Stadium or you're playing somewhere that's a little bit more spacious like Stillwell or even this weekend at Dale Mitchell Park, that's a hitter's ballpark. And for an Oklahoma team, I know I'm kind of getting ahead a little bit, but for an Oklahoma team that's top 30 nationally in multiple offensive categories, Eagles have to go inside out, go the other way when necessary, work counts. But something that they did very well after game two when talking with Coach Hinnon, if they got the first pitch and they got a good first pitch, they were able to put it in play. I think it was seven times in 11 tries that when the first pitch was put in play, they reached. So it's being able to do damage on pitches that are mistakes and not make weak contact and get quick outs, because that's how pitch counts stay down and that's how starters work longer.
So we transition into the Oklahoma Sooners. We've got the voice of the Oklahoma Sooners, Toby Rowland, joining us on the phone. Toby, appreciate you joining us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. My pleasure. Looking forward to seeing you guys this weekend.
Give us kind of just an overview of what this Sooners team looks like. Obviously, it's going to be the first time Georgia Southern sees the Sooners. What does Oklahoma baseball really look like, and what's it all about?
Well, in a broader sense, and then I'll narrow it down to this year, this is a proud program, won a couple of national championships, the last one coming in the 90s. Got a good little history of guys going to the major leagues, and they love their little baseball in the state of Oklahoma, you know, from Johnny Bench to Mickey Mantle, and there's been a lot of greats come out of this state, and certainly University of Oklahoma has had a proud tradition. This year's been a disappointing season so far. They felt like last year they had a College World Series caliber team. Three starters there, all three weekend starters got drafted in the 5-round major league draft. One of them going in the first round, the third starter, no hit LSU last year, Dane Acker. So they had a great rotation a year ago. They were off to a great start, and it was really disappointing for everyone, when that season had to be halted. So they had to rebuild their entire rotation this year, weekend rotation, and it's been an adventure. It's been a little bit rough to try to figure out the pitching. They've hit the ball well, which is a little bit upside down for us. Skip Johnson is the head coach here in his fourth season, and he's known as a pitching guru. He's kind of Clayton Kershaw's personal coach. And Oklahoma under Skip has been outstanding on the mound, and they've struggled to score runs a little bit. Well, this year's been the opposite. They've been really good at the plate, and they're last in the Big 12 in team ERA. So they sit right now going into a game against Texas Tech tonight at 19-17 and out of the NCAA at-large picture right now. And fans are frustrated. You know, they're 4-8 in Big 12 play and at the halfway point, and feel like maybe they could or should be a little better than that. But there's time to turn it around. I think they've got talent. I know they got talent at the plate, and I think they got some talent, too, on that pitching staff if they can just put it all together and they're hoping to do that here late in the season.
You talk about the offensive side for Oklahoma, and it's led by Tyler Hardman. It's a team that's hitting .295 overall, but Hardman has really kind of led this team and led a lot of the country. When we've talked about it a couple of times, hitting .444 on the year. What has it really been about his game that's taken it to the next level?
You know, he's a veteran. He's a redshirt junior who's been here a while. First baseman, big kid, smart. Very friendly, has been in the lineup really since he stepped on campus early in his career. He had high strikeout numbers. He's always had some power, but he struck out a lot. And he has brought that number down considerably. And this year, he had a really good quarantine. He put in a lot of work during that downtime, and he showed up back on campus really swinging the bat well. And it's an amazing season he has put together. There have been no droughts really at all. I mean, he had a weekend this past weekend at Kansas State in which he only had three or four hits, and that was pretty shocking. I mean, that's that's as close to a drought as he's had. So even when he's made outs, you know, it's been because he's hit a rocket right at the second baseman or right at the left fielder. He's a solid, solid hitter. He's got a plus glove at first base. He has really shot up the draft scout boards this year. And nothing that's going to wow you. I mean, when he hits – they're impressive when he hits home runs, but he's only got eight of them on the year. I mean, that's not a giant total. So all around, really solid baseball player, and he's a tough out.
Toby, there was an article on D1Baseball.com last August about the COVID protocols that were put in place. But from somebody that's on the inside and somebody that has seen it up close and personal, what has Oklahoma done so well trying to battle with what everybody else is dealing with in regards to COVID-19?
Well, I'm not too much on the inside. You know, I'm not in the bubble, so to speak. So I don't get to experience everything they do. I have throughout the year this year, whether it's football, basketball, or baseball, at times because of travel situations, gone through the testing with them and the protocols and everything. And I have a son who is a equipment manager for the men's basketball team, and I've heard from him kind of some of the inside stories. But, you know, it's been tough for everybody. It's just on top of going to school and on top of playing, devoting the time that you have to play a Division I sport. And now you've got all of this extra testing and protocols and hoops to jump through. And I feel bad for them. I feel bad for the players and coaches and everybody around the programs that have to do this to be able to do what they love. But they do it without grumbling and just see it as, you know, another opportunity to come together as a team. And, you know, so far with baseball, we haven't had any games canceled, knock on wood. I think, you know, there have been some situations where student athletes have tested positive here or there, had to miss some time, but we haven't had a situation where any games or series have had to be canceled. So that's good. And we'll just keep our fingers crossed that can keep going.
On the pitching side for Oklahoma, you talked about it's been a little bit hit and miss with the three guys in your starting rotation last year being drafted. Who are some of the guys that have kind of tried to step up into those roles, especially on the weekend rotation?
Well, the best starter for them all year has been Braden Carmichael. And you guys will probably see him on Saturday, either Saturday or Sunday. Carmichael's a little lefty, 5'10". Pitchability guy. He's got four pitches, doesn't throw it overly hard, but he mixes them really well, and he's done a good job keeping teams off balance. He went to Fayetteville and beat Arkansas when they were ranked number one on a Tuesday night and really went from just a guy to, hey, this guy's special. And ever since then, he's been really good for them. I think he's 5-1 on the year. But it's been a challenge to find – couple of other guys to go with him. They have started Wyatt Olds much of the year, and they've started Jake Bennett much of the year. And last weekend, they stacked those guys on game one. They went with Jake Bennett, who's a big left-hander, 6'6" left-hander. And then he went about half the game. And then they brought Olds out of the bullpen to go the rest of the game, and it worked really well. Now, they lost that game in extra innings, but they only gave up 2 runs combined between those two guys. So I would expect we'll see that approach again this weekend. I don't know that, but it worked well, so I'm guessing we'll see it again this weekend in game one. Olds is a hard thrower with a big slider who struggles with command at times. Jake Bennett is the big lefty, doesn't throw overly hard. Fastball in the low 90s, good breaking ball, but he's coming at a 6'6" lefty angle, which can make him difficult at times. And I think they feel good about that combination. They feel good about Carmichael. Don't know what the answer would be in game three. They tried a bullpen by committee approach on Sunday against Kansas State that did not work very well. They're going to throw a kid tonight against Texas Tech that maybe is an answer there, but he's not gone more than an inning at a time. So your guess is really as good as mine. Skip Johnson has a saying that he likes to put all the names in a cowboy hat and just see who he draws out, and that guy gets the start. So I'm not trying to be coy or have any gamesmanship here, but that's kind of the place where they're at now as far as finding another starter that they can rely on. And so we'll see.
I don't know how it worked out the way that it did, but the Bally Sports affiliate that we have here in Southeast Georgia, we've actually gotten to watch quite a few Oklahoma games this year, and one of those was the insane comeback against Oral Roberts when they scored 8 runs in the top of the first inning, and you come back and eventually win the game in the late innings. Number one, what was that game like from your standpoint? And two, how much does that illustrate just how dangerous your offense has been this year from a collective standpoint?
That game was the season in a nutshell. They have struggled mightily in the first inning pitching. They have given up 40-some runs. I think they've been outscored like 45-19 or 45-20 in the first inning this year. From the third inning on, OU has outscored their opponents by 80-some runs. But the first couple of innings have been a disaster. So they have repeatedly found themselves behind early in games and had to fight their way back. And the offense has been good enough that on a lot of nights like that one, they've been able to do it. 8-0, half an inning of baseball, and they came back and won. So that's pretty indicative of the year. I mean, they can hit. Now, you know, everybody runs into a night where a pitcher's hot or you're not clicking, but this is a good hitting team. It is as good of a hitting team as Oklahoma's had maybe in a decade. But when you're 3-0, 4-0, 5-0 behind before you get a chance to grab the bats, it can be a little demoralizing, and sometimes you can't climb that mountain. So that was a fun night because Oklahoma came back and won that game, and that's an improbable comeback when you're down that far. But it is, you know, indicative of kind of what the frustrating storyline of the season has been for them.
One guy I wanted to touch on in y'all's bullpen, Jason Ruffcorn, has been really good. 3 saves on the year, a sub-1 ERA, and somebody that has struck out 32 guys in 19 innings. And when you've got numbers like that, you know he's going to be the guy to go to in that bullpen.
Well, you guys are going to love seeing him. I mean, you know, if you see him, it usually means Oklahoma's trying to close out a game. But you'll enjoy being baseball fans watching him because he is one of the best relievers in the country. He has some character to him. You wouldn't know it. If you saw him in the hotel or whatever, you wouldn't know that's Jason Ruffcorn. But when he takes the mound, he's got the glasses on. He leans way out over when he's you know, looking into the catcher for the signal, and he's kind of leaning forward and slings it to the plate at 95 miles an hour or more. He hit 98 and 99 over there in Fayetteville. Great command for the stuff that he has, and a drop off the table slider. So he's special. The running question all year has been, how do they capitalize more on him? And honestly, he could be an answer in game three if he's not used in games one or two as far as a starter goes. They've been threatening to do that all year, or not, you know, talking about the possibility of, we've got this great reliever. He's only got three saves and we're in the second half of the season. We're not getting the bang for the buck with Jason Ruffcorn. How do we better utilize him? And it's been bantied about that maybe they should, you know, see what he looks like in a starter's role. But he's so dominant in the back end of the bullpen that I completely understand Skip Johnson's hesitation to make that move, and he hasn't done it yet. But if you get a chance to see him, I mean, he's special. He's a high round draft pick guy who has the stuff that you're looking for when you're a professional baseball team, and super nice kid too.
Take us into kind of the culture around Oklahoma. What can we expect on a baseball game day? I know it'll be a little bit different this year with all the COVID-19 restrictions, but what does a game day around Mitchell Park look like?
You guys are here on an interesting weekend because the football spring game is Saturday. So I will not be with you on Saturday. I'll be over calling the football game on TV, which isn't till 4 o'clock. And so they've put the baseball game, I think, at 1 o'clock and the football game at 4, hoping that baseball plays in about 3 hours and a bunch of fans will be able to attend both events. I think they should make it a noon start for baseball, because I would say maybe one of our 30 some baseball games have been played in under 3 hours this year. So I don't like our chances, but anyway, that's the way it is. They love their baseball here. I would say that it is a bit of a fair weather fan base. When things are going well, they're really, boisterous about their love for the Sooners. When it's not, then sometimes you'll have some nights at Mitchell Park where it's not a great crowd. They're also competing with the number one ranked softball team in the country, that is across, you know, the parking lot too. And Patagasso's Sooners, which are over in Georgia tonight, by the way, are quite a show, and the fans love them. So the fan base is kind of split between the two diamonds this time of year. But what you guys will see, if the weather is good, we're at about 25-35% capacity. So that's like 600 or 700 people in the stands, and it'll be sold out as far as those tickets go. But the berms beyond the outfield walls are elevated here all the way from foul pole to foul pole, and it's free. And you'll see tons of people, fraternities, sororities, who will bring their pop-up chairs and their coolers and their grills and their couches, and they'll go hang out on the berms out there and watch some baseball for free. Russ Ortiz, who was a University of Oklahoma player and a pitcher in the bigs for quite a while, has pledged this year every Saturday to buy $1,000 worth of pizza for all the people out on the berms. So people love Saturdays around here, home games. The Pizza Hut truck pulls up and they pile out 50, 60 pizzas, how many ever that is, that equals $1,000.
That's cool.
Everybody gets free pizza. So I think the berms this year is kind of what makes it special, because you got like, 600 people in the stadium and another, however nice the weather is, 1,000 people or more outside the stadium that are watching. And sometimes the outfielders will have a fun relationship with the people out there. And that's kind of what makes it neat.
Looking forward to it. Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, it's Georgia Southern and Oklahoma. Toby, appreciate you joining us.
All right, you guys travel safe, and we'll see you out here in Soonerland.
Sounds good. Once again, that's Toby Rowland, the voice of the Oklahoma Sooners, to give us a little bit more of an inside scoop. And I remember Russ Ortiz was a former Atlanta Brave for a hot minute.
Yeah, he did some things against the Pirates a couple times, so I remember Russ Ortiz pretty well.
Well, he probably wasn't in an Atlanta uniform. But Georgia Southern and Oklahoma, going to be fun to get out there.
Never, we already said this, we've never been to Oklahoma, so we'll have to figure out some calorie.
I guess.
Yeah.
For the weekend.
More than one.
I mean, that's not going to be a concern. I'm sure we're going to find some great barbecue out there and some big, thick cuts of meat. But this is different. This is cool. This is Power 5, if you will. This is Big 12. You know, Oklahoma almost had a chance to play a three-game series at J.I. Clements about 4 years ago. It didn't work out that way. They ended up playing, ironically, a weekend series at Kennesaw State. I think they were looking for a series on the East because they were this way for some reason. I can't remember exactly, but they ended up going to Kennesaw instead of coming here. But this is one that I doubt will get returned.
Yeah.
But this is still an experience for these guys. Look, he said that it's a down year for Oklahoma, whatever. These guys wonder how they stack up.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if you're playing where they think they are or if you're going to play a series against Texas Tech or Texas, which has an extended winning streak right now, also in the Big 12, or anybody else Power 5-wise. How do you stack up?
And it's something that obviously you beat Georgia a couple of midweeks ago. And so – but I think Georgia kind of gets overlooked a little bit in the sense that you see them every year, and so it's almost more similar to a Mercer or a North Florida or somebody that you see every midweek. Georgia Tech, you normally see them every year. This year you probably don't because of weather and COVID and everything else that's working against it. But I think when you have a Oklahoma or even a Tennessee that Georgia Southern saw earlier in the year, it's more of a team that has a little bit more regard for, just from A, it's unfamiliar territory, and B, it's somebody that you hear talked about in the national media a lot. And yes, you hear Georgia at times. Yes, you hear Tennessee at times. But those are more familiar, more close to home, and it's not this unreachable. And that's not to say that Oklahoma's an unreachable task by any stretch, but I think it gives more of a little bit of a regard for an Oklahoma, somebody that you don't see a whole lot.
And we're an SEC country, so when we're talking about teams that aren't us, it's going to be those teams. And even some of those, a Vanderbilt and LSU and Arkansas, we're not seeing those very much, but they're in our geographic bubble here. So those are the ones that we're going to talk about probably more. There's not a whole lot of conversation between Georgia Southern and Oklahoma. Never played them.
Yeah.
Not one game. I mean,
which I was kind of surprised about.
Not one game.
In the long history of both, you would have thought that at least once. There's not many teams that Georgia Southern hasn't played once.
And you'll scrape a tournament here and there or a showcase where you're traveling to a random point, or you'd think a series way back when.
Meet up in a regional every once in a while.
But the fact that there's no frame of reference, there's no history, means that we're going to make history regardless of how the games go. We don't know anything about Oklahoma on the field. They don't know anything about Georgia Southern on the field. Of course, great have great traditions. Oklahoma winning two national championships in 51 and 94, and the Eagles going to the College World Series in 73 and 90, an AI national title in 62, what have you. Get to make some friends, get to establish some relationships, and get to have some experience with a different part of the country. We don't go to the Midwest. This is neat.
Be the first time we get to meet Toby Rowland.
Yeah, then he'll be there Friday and Sunday, and I get what he is saying about Saturday because I could see the noon being more likely because they're just asking for that Saturday game to be 10 days. And unfortunately, Friday's forecast does not look very good. I just checked it before we got on. It's 90% chance of rain out in Norman, so maybe they're going to have to end up playing two. So they may get their wish that it gets bumped up a little bit earlier on Saturday. We wouldn't play two on Sunday because the kill time would be in effect since the team has to fly back and get back to Georgia. But we'll play it as it lies. We've got to get to Kennesaw first, and that's a team that's doing pretty well this year. They're 22-9. They've had a COVID pause, but they've just kept winning since they've come back from it. Last time we saw them was 2 years ago. Many of the same guys offensively are there. Pitching-wise, they're a lot different because the midweek guys that we see are now on the weekend. But there's always a little bit between Georgia Southern and Kennesaw, especially up there at the Shake, where the Eagles have done pretty well in recent years. It's one of the longer midweek trips that Georgia Southern takes, but it's a series that the Eagles have done pretty well in.
You got two longtime head coaches. Mike Sansing up at Kennesaw has been there forever. Head coach Rodney Hinnon, year 22 here in Statesboro. It's a team that Georgia Southern saw in a regional down in Tallahassee.
That's right.
And that was a game that a lot of Georgia Southern would like to forget. Not only did Georgia Southern fall to Kennesaw State, it went 13 innings. Kennesaw scored 8 in the top half of the 13th after a 2.5-hour rain delay mid-game.
That was a killer.
That was one that I think Ryan Chambers has forgotten.
Well, you also think Georgia Southern was ahead at that point. So if that goes normal and they hold on, maybe the Eagles are clinching a regional. Maybe they're going to a super for the first time ever. And maybe that 14 season, the story of that 14 season is even better. But the fact that they rallied like they did and the story of Jason Richmond alone is enough to get you emotional about that. But coming back and winning the tournament, then shutting out a national seed if you're Sam Howard, ends up getting him drafted. It was great stuff.
But Georgia Southern will take on the Kennesaw State Owls. It's a 5 o'clock first pitch on Wednesday, and then make their way to Soonerland as Georgia Southern will take on Oklahoma Friday, Saturday, and Sunday as it stands right now, again, weather permitting. But Georgia Southern will take on Oklahoma 7:30, the first pitch on Friday. It'll be a 2 o'clock Eastern first pitch on Saturday, 2 o'clock first pitch Eastern on Sunday as we make our way back out to Central Time.
The Eagles, I hope they're ready to score this weekend because it's going to take a lot of runs. But I do think that this is going to be a lot more competitive than maybe the national pundits would agree, because I think Georgia Southern's ready to show what they've really got.
Yeah, I think you're right on that one. But it's time now for our You Pick.
Oh.
Yeah, you're not getting off that easy.
Well, what?
We're not getting off that easy.
No, I'd forgotten about that.
Right.
Toby was really good. I really appreciate him doing that. Yeah. He's got enough going on. They've got a big game nationally televised tonight against Texas Tech. They're playing in Amarillo.
You can watch that on ESPNU.
So that'll be nice for us as we're making our final notes on Kennesaw, get a chance to watch Tyler Hardman probably get 3 or 4 more hits. When Mason McWhorter has come up this year, Tyler Hardman hasn't been too far away, and knowing that they're going to get to meet this weekend is pretty neat. I'd love to see Roughcorn pitch. I've seen him a couple of times on the Valley Sports affiliate, which we really lucked out to get a chance to see some of those games.
Yeah, no kidding.
But somebody that's throwing mid to upper 90s. We saw Gavin Williams here with East Carolina earlier this season, throwing multiple 99s up on the scoreboard, and you don't get those too often. You just don't.
This week's You Pick.
What do we get?
You're very excited for this one. I think I already know your answer on this one. Favorite baseball stadium you've called a game in? A silence comes over the crowd. I really didn't think this would be that tough for you.
Been a lot of stadiums.
I realize that.
What'd you think it was?
I thought you were going to say Riley Park.
See, when I look at it, that's my favorite home park.
Okay.
Because I'm a couple hundred games there, and we're talking pro college. There's a different dynamic. There's something special about Teague Moore Field.
Yeah. Yeah.
Atmosphere-wise, those two would be up there, and I've seen a lot of pro parks, but there's something atmosphere-wise about Charleston where you've got the river, the harbor, the James Island connector, the palmetto trees. If it's sunny and it's gorgeous, which it is 99.9% of the time, it's just about unbeatable. But when we're in Lafayette, to smell the Cajun Cooking Club, to hear center field in the seventh inning stretch, to hear Section A cheer for the opposing team if they do well, which we've seen it twice with Evan Challenger and Seth Schumann, during our travels down there, there's something really special about that place.
Yeah, mine was going to be college, was going to be Teague Moore Field. And then, I guess, Pro Park. I haven't called a pro game, but in the summer league, the championship my first year was at then Cool Ray, now Cool Today Park, I think. The home of the Gwinnett Stripers.
That's what they changed the name to?
Yeah, I guess.
Okay.
Was the Gwinnett Braves at the time. But that park, it was only the second year it was open, but that place is pretty cool.
Yeah.
So, Cool Ray. There it is. So,
there's a lot of really, really nice pro parks.
Yeah.
But that I'll just
a lot of really bad pro parks too.
Yeah. Yeah, I had two of them in the same trip back in 2015 too, but I'm not gonna talk about those.
But that is our short edition of You Pick.
Who asked that?
Somebody who doesn't want to be named.
Okay.
Anonymous.
I was going to say, if that was Toby, that's really good. No. Him hopping on. Oh, yeah, talk about your favorite park, sure.
He's hoping it changes this week. it is going to be a very nice ballpark, just newly renovated this offseason.
All turf. including the mound. I mean, Troy, it's all turf, but dirt mound. Teague Moore is all turf, dirt mound. This is a turf mound, too, so maybe that's a question we can ask BJ and Rodney about how different that is. I don't know if they've ever been on a field where it's been an all-turf mound. Those don't exist a whole lot.
No, I'm trying to think, because Louisiana's all-turf except the mound.
Right.
Troy, same thing. I feel like they have. I don't know where.
Maybe Elon, because Elon's turf.
I don't know that. Yeah, I don't think Elon was full turf when Georgia Southern saw them back in SoCon days.
Yeah, last time I was there was 14, and that's one I've kind of selectively blocked out. But, hey, got to go back there this year. So I guess we'll get a chance to see it.
It'll be a fun week for Georgia Southern baseball. It starts against the Kennesaw State Owls tomorrow night. If you're listening this on time, it'll be a Wednesday, 5 o'clock first pitch. We're on the air at 4:30 from Stillwell Stadium in North Metro Atlanta. And then Georgia Southern will hit the bird and will make their way out to Oklahoma to take on the Boomer Sooners Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Going to be a fun trip for us. Going to be a fun trip and hopefully a productive trip for Georgia Southern baseball. But that'll wrap things up for us. My thanks to Toby Rowland for hopping on, the voice of the Oklahoma Sooners, to talk a little bit of Sooner baseball. But for Danny Reed, this is Colin Lacey saying so long, everybody, all across the Georgia Southern Sports Network from Learfield IMG College.
Inside Eagle Nation, powered by Learfield, the official podcast of Georgia Southern Athletics.